is CBS Eye in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents. Quickly, we go immediately to the news about Iran. Malcolm, I learned that Iran is boasting about resources unblocked. I'm presuming that means cash. At the same time, the new president, Raisi, is talking about the virus, about COVID. How do these stories go together, Malcolm? What's the plan?
Very much go together, John, in the sense that they are dealing with the internal challenges that Raisi is facing. As you know, his Minister of Education nominee was overwhelmingly rejected by the parliament and I think will not be resurrected. There have been made several attempts to try and get him passed. But it's only one symptom of the debate between you have the hardliners and the so-called moderates, the followers of your buddy Zarif and the former government, Rouhani, where he's trying to distinguish himself from them. So in the one hand, to satisfy the hardliners, on the other hand, to try and put the prospect of negotiations forward, which many people in Iran want to see happen. So he, Raisi, announced that the country's resources and a number of countries, including claiming $3.5 billion of blocked resources, had been released by one of the countries holding them, and claiming that others, a significant portion of the unblocked resources were getting into Iran's trade cycle. He wouldn't specify which country it is, but as you know, we have billions of dollars in under sanctions from the United States that are frozen in a number of countries. So that's on the one hand. He has been focusing on COVID as opposed to international issues because of the tremendous unrest in the country. They just allowed in 30 million doses this month, mostly from Sinopharm, but it's an action on his part to try and offset this the domestic unrest that is very widespread. So he gets it from the right and the left and is trying to walk a fine line as they approach the talks in Vienna, which are supposed to begin November 29th. While he blocks the IAEA, the inspectors are not getting in. They're not getting to see what is really happening. They are announcing, the Iranians are announcing all the time increased numbers of the 60% enriched uranium, and the IAEA estimates that they've gone up 8 kilograms just since August in the stockpiles, all of which are violations of the JCPOA.
Where are the Europeans in this, Malcolm? They are part of the, they are signatories.
They are signatories. They're the party with whom they will sit down to talk on November 29th, not with the U.S. U.S. is on the sidelines because we pulled out until we pull in. So there's a lot of talk now about a plan B, which was trying to be sold by Rob Malley on his tour in Europe, in the Middle East. The Europeans are looking for a plan B, but so far they say they don't know what it is. They are playing the same duplicitous game that they usually play. They want to get to negotiations right away, but at the same time, they believe the violations by Iran have gone too far. You cannot ignore the blatant numbers. And so while the U.S. is promoting something that would allow some enrichment up to 60%, but would freeze it there, and in turn they would get some of the funds released, which Israel and I know many of the other countries in the Middle East are very vehemently opposed because we know where that money's going.
Syria, darkness visible, a client state of Iran and Russia and several other bad actors. There is a story you tell me without details of bags of cash. Where, Malcolm?
Bags of cash that I know is a story you will love, because they were showing up in southern Syria, and Assad and Russia have become very concerned because they're coming from Iran, and they're saying that they are buying homes and land to be occupied by Iranians or their proxies from Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yemen. This is part of the population replacement that Iran was engaged in for a long time. It's actually gotten the concern now of the Assad regime and of Putin, because they see that this is an attempt to create a permanent shift, whereas they, the Russians, certainly are trying to push the Iranians back, and Assad wants the Iranians and the Turks out of the country, maybe even the Russians ultimately. So it's a very important symbolic in one sense, but real practical change on the ground in another.
A puzzle, Malcolm. The Syria right now, is the war over? Has it been declared done? There's conflict in the north with Turkey. And there is at least one province, and I was last informed, that was in the hands of the jihadists. What is the opinion in Damascus?
No, they know it's not over, but they feel that he is going to survive. And you see that reflected in the visits by the UAE foreign minister, Abdul bin Zayed. You see it, and that Jordan, Egypt, and other Arab countries are quietly lining up to tip the balance to get Syria back into the Arab League, that the foreign minister's visit was part of a trend of renewed engagement, including a call between Assad and King Abdullah, the first one in years, the opening of the border, which had proven very costly to Jordan as well, the Jordan-Syrian border. And there's a development plan in place, supposedly, that would lead to normalization, policy shifts on the part of the Syrians, curbing Iran's influence, and the getting rid of the pro-Iranian militias. So the hope is, on the part of these other Arab countries, that they can get Iran to be at least limited, if not removed. We know that the United States supposedly opposes this normalization until they get real results in Syria.
To the PA, you tell me there's a flare-up on the West Bank. Is there also trouble in Gaza?
There's trouble on both sides, John, and we see that more than 20 houses, businesses, and shops were set afire in Hebron, where gunmen masked belonging to the Jaban and to the Alawawi Abu Asnaya clans engaged in fighting. They say that every night dozens of gunmen exchange gunfire in various parts of Hebron. But more than that, four universities in the West Bank were closed because of the violent clashes on the campuses between rival clans. So this is all internal to the Palestinian population there. And there were violent clashes between the various Fatah-affiliated groups. And this is a sign of more general unrest that we're feeling of people, that all this money has come in, none of it gets to the people, and they're demanding a change. And as you know, they certainly haven't had for an election in, what, 13 or 14 years of his four-year term on the part President Abbas, who seems to be in relatively good health, although everybody predicts that he's dying. It doesn't seem to be the case. And the flare-up, and again in Gaza, where growing numbers of people, result of the latest explosion was because of the death of Gazans who are migrating off the Turkish coast. We see a big exodus from Gaza again, and they condemn the, quote, heroic Gazan leaders. They say they drive SUVs and the people are living in total poverty. So the situation there is one of unrest. Usually they try to divert that focus of anger against the Israelis, but we see that on the social media, where the young people and olders are started We Want to Live campaign against their own government, against Hamas entity.
The status, Malcolm, of the Biden administration initiative towards the Palestinians in Jerusalem. What is the plan, and what has happened?
Well, nothing has happened yet, and I think they're worried about the destabilizing the current government, which made very clear that they will not allow a consulate in Jerusalem. There are plenty of other places where a consulate can be put up, even more convenient for the Palestinian population, but this would compromise the law, the 1995 Jerusalem law, and they feel would be a violation of the status of Jerusalem. So I think the administration is taking it very carefully. The ambassador, Greenfield Thomas from the U.S. ambassador to UN was there this week in Israel. I know that they raised it. I know the members of Congress discussed it. I don't see great enthusiasm for this move on the part of our elected officials. The administration is committed to it, but I think it's going to be very hard to implement.
Good news. We saved some, Malcolm. There's a solar field, and who is participating?
So this is it is indeed good news to see this kind of development, where Israel, Jordan, and the UAE signed a deal to build a huge solar farm that Secretary Special Envoy Kerry and others have promoted. It will be located in the Jordanian desert, and the UAE providing funding will provide energy to Israel, which will build a desalination plant on the Mediterranean coast to provide water to Jordan. So you see, it's pretty complex, but it's a very effective effort of cooperation, because the distance for Jordan to get to the Mediterranean and have their own desalination plant this way, the border of Israel is much closer. Israel would build a desalination plant, provide the water, Qatar funding, and they would build a huge solar field, which would provide energy to Israel, to Jordan, and maybe even to the UAE at some point.
Malcolm Holine.
It is a massive development.
Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.